The Ryan Tubridy Show on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Sky Broadband. With our broadband, your world is limitless. Live beyond.
We got an email into the programme a couple of weeks ago from a dad who hasn't been able to see his children for a few months. And he wanted to highlight the issue of parental alienation, which actually was recently included in the new international classification of diseases under the World Health Organization, the WHO. Now, it's a condition which my next guest, as a systemic family therapist, is all too familiar with. Brian O'Sullivan, you're very welcome to the programme. Thanks for coming in this morning.
Thank you. Good morning to you and your listeners.
Now, look, just explain to us, I suppose we've got the brief of it there, really, from, what I described it as, that, you know, not being able to see the kids. But what exactly is parental alienation?
It's a good question, Maggie. So what we know very clearly is that's a relational phenomenon. It's said to occur most often in the context of high conflict separations and divorces. And really what happens is a child will align very strongly with one parent and then will reject the previously loved parent without legitimate justification. But I suppose one important point to mention there is that this happens to mums and dads.
Okay. Does it ever happen in a situation where there isn't a separation or divorce?
It's a good point, Maggie. So yes, for sure. I mean, the literature is quite clear. It can happen in that context. But the focus of my, practice, research and publications is purely in the context of separations and divorces.
And what sort of age are we talking about? Can it happen at any age to children?
Yeah, again, a good point, Maggie. It can happen at any age. Very often when a child will hit 7 years of age onwards is when we see, I suppose, that it's most devastating. But for sure, I mean, I've met with children who are 5 and 6 years of age who will present as having been subjected to alienating behaviours by one parent.
And why is it that the World Health Organization has decided to actually classify it now? I mean, why wasn't it classified before?
So I suppose it's like everything else. The ICD-11 is an emerging document. Every couple of years they review and revise a variety of medical and relational phenomena.
This is the ICD International Classification of Diseases, yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And so every 5 years or so they review it, which is a healthy thing, much like the Diagnostic Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, currently in its 5th edition and from 2013, they too revise about every 5 years or so. And so really what's happened is that there's been a body of literature, empirical literature, that it's a tsunami of empirical literature that has come along and said, you know, this is a problem and it needs to be addressed.
You mentioned there that it's the child alienating a parent. So this is a problem that children will have. It's not something that goes two ways as such, is it?
So I suppose, well, again, an interesting point, Maggie. Mm. So I suppose, I mean, first of all, we'll have a child who is being subjected to what we call alienating behaviours. What does that look like? Well, essentially, we will have one parent who will be profoundly denigrating the other parent in front of the child, along with a variety of other behaviours. In fact, the full list is on parentalienation.eu if people are interested. And the child is essentially placed into a loyalty conflict or a double bind where there's no good choice for the child. And so the child will, as a result of that, the child will essentially align with one parent and reject the other previously loved parent. And the difficulty is that we know very, very clearly that this has a sustained and enduring psychological and emotional impact on the child, not just now, but across their lifespan and on into future generations.
What sort of impact? I mean, if a child is starting, if parental alienation is part of the behaviour from a child who's 8, 9, or 10 or whatever, how long can it last if it's not fixed, I suppose?
Yes, that's a key piece, because some well-meaning and well-intentioned professionals will hold an idea that this is a normal transient piece for parents who are separating and divorcing. But actually informed practitioners know very well that when relationships are fractured in this way, the possibility of a spontaneous reconciliation is really rather remote, and it doesn't bear out in the clinical and academic literature.
And how important is it for kids who are involved in a breakdown with the parents, and though you know, and going through a divorce or a separation, how important is it for them, for both parents to be, I suppose, working together, and for it not to be one or the other?
Yeah, so I mean, we know very, very clearly that children's outcomes are optimal when they have a quality relationship with both parents, which just brings me to one side point, and that this isn't about mum's rights, it's not about dad's rights, it's about the rights of a child to have a quality relationship with both parents. I suppose maybe then just to reference back to some of the specific harms that we know occurs with children. And so what we have is very, very clearly with clinical depression, anxiety, fractured relationships, dysfunctional attachments, alcohol abuse, substance abuse, suicidal ideation, deliberate self-harming behaviours, academic underachievement, premature sexual activity, and the list goes on and on.
That's a fairly exhaustive list, yes. Brian. And I suppose then as a child grows up and becomes an adult and potentially suffers from any of those things, then if they go on to have children themselves, does it then impact on their relationship with their children?
It's absolutely key point, Maggie, because we know very, very clearly that these dynamics transcend generations of families. And so what we have then is the future generations and children in those future generations experiencing the very same significant psychological and emotional harms. And I suppose it brings me to one point maybe that we do need to be very, very clear that this is psychological and emotional abuse of children. It needs to be viewed that way, and it needs to be responded to like we would respond to other forms of abuse in children.
It must be incredibly difficult obviously for children, but also I suppose for parents when they're going through a separation and a breakup and potentially divorce, especially if something has happened, I'm thinking of an affair or whatever it might be, that then creates, you know, or just generally feeling abandoned, I suppose, if a parent just decides to walk away from a relationship and the family home. It must be incredibly difficult then for them to, I suppose, keep focused and not be negative about the other parent.
For sure. So I suppose the key piece there, Maggie, that you're alluding to is that there are reasons why children will reject a parent for normative reasons. Perhaps maybe a parent has been abusive or neglectful to the child. And in those cases, we refer to that as justified estrangement. And in that space, there can never be alienation.
Okay, but what about then when say one parent feels abandoned or is under pressure, or maybe the other parent has had an affair or whatever it might be, and then it must be very difficult for that parent who's left there not to be negative, and therefore, you know, not to pass on the negative feelings to the child.
For sure, it can be a challenge, absolutely. I mean, at the end of the day, mums and dads are humans first, and when we get consumed by conflict, it can be really, really difficult to place the needs of the children ahead of our own at those times. But with the proper supports and resources and with early intervention, it is entirely possible to do that.
A couple of people are getting in touch with us this morning, Brian. On email, I want to remain anonymous, of course, absolutely, and you can do if you want to get in touch with us. Our text number, we're speaking to Brian O'Sullivan, consultant, systemic family therapist and expert in parental alienation, 51551. You can email ryan@rte.ie. So this person says, I had a super relationship with my two children. Since my ex and I broke up in 2013, I've been constantly in and out of court trying to get reasonable access to them. During this time, there have been numerous allegations made against me by their mother. Unfortunately, last year, they went to an all-time low when she falsely reported me for sexually abusing our own child. I was devastated and still am. I haven't seen my children since. I was eventually cleared of these allegations only 3 weeks ago, but I went through absolute hell. I can only imagine what the children are going through. If I hadn't the great support of my current wife, family and good friends, I'm not sure I would be here today. When these types of allegations are made, you are immediately assumed guilty and contact is cut. It is ideal for an alienating parent and gives them more time to make the situation worse. Very difficult, Brian.
Yes, absolutely. And I suppose there's a couple of points just to make there. The first one, I suppose, is that the levelling of allegations, both mums and dads do this. We know very clearly that dads will typically allege physical abuse or neglect, and mums will typically allege sexual abuse. And of course, naturally enough, when allegations like that are levelled, services and agencies have to privilege the welfare of children and ensure the veracity or otherwise of these allegations. However, The challenge is that when one parent will allege allegations of abuse against another, it becomes a very successful strategy because, naturally enough, the contact then between the child and the targeted parent is terminated. And that unwittingly actually perpetuates the alienation. And just to make one more point in relation to that is that informed practitioners will know very, very well that in cases of alienation, allegations of abuse are false. And it occurs in up to 70 to 80% of cases of alienation.
That's a huge amount. I was going to say, do we have any idea of how many false allegations are made? Up to 70 to 80% of those cases are
in cases of high conflict, divorce, and separation, where alienation has been affirmed.
It's incredible.
It is 70 to 80%.
It's actually frightening, I think, that a parent would do that to their children. Because, as you said, I suppose that in itself is also a form of abuse.
Yes.
Is there any follow-on then to, with regard to the authorities when the other parent makes that false allegation against another parent? I mean, legally.
Yes. So, well, I suppose, first of all, let me say I'm not a legal person, but if you have a parent who will allege false allegations against another parent, there are no consequences, as I understand it, for that parent. And one of the real tragedies in this is that the children end up being interviewed multiple times by multiple agencies. So, for example, they may be subjected to multiple interviews by Gardaí, by social workers, by perhaps maybe St. Clair's Unit in Temple Street, and so on and so forth. And in those cases, we are very much at the severe end of the spectrum. And what's required in those cases is very firm and proactive decisions and a collaboration by the judiciary and the mental health professionals to effect change that privileges the children's psychological and emotional health.
Because that must be very, very traumatic for children to have to go through.
Absolutely.
Yeah. We've had an email in here. Thanks for addressing the topic of parental alienation, as it is widely ignored in the media and by politicians, as it only affects a small group of people. I've not seen my eldest daughter for over a year and a half following the breakdown of my marriage. The only reason this happened is that my ex is preventing me from seeing my daughter. This is a complex issue involving hidden psychological illness that the legal and child protection systems are not equipped to deal with. The government must legislate to prevent one parent alienating a child from the other. This is not a gender issue. It happens to both fathers and mothers.
Absolutely. And in my own clinical practice in Stillorgan, over the last 4 years or so, I've seen very, very clearly there are thousands of mothers in this country who are experiencing this phenomenon. And there is a piece or an idea, there may be an idea that while this might be expected to be something that happens to men, mums, Irish mums going through this are silent. They have no voice in this.
Why is that?
It's almost... as horrendous as it is for dads, there seems to be an added stigma for a mum where she's faced with a child who is rejecting her without good reason. And in terms of the amount of time it may have been that that particular emailer has referenced, I mean, I see very, very clearly, I work with parents all the time who haven't seen their children in 6, 8, 10, 12 years for no good reason.
And well, as we mentioned before, the damage is then, I mean, the relationship. I mean, can relationships be repaired after that amount of time?
They can be, and the ideas around systemic family psychotherapy have a unique contribution to that. There are specialised family therapy programmes that focus exclusively on reconciling the child-parent relationship. Informed practitioners will know very, very well that children do hold and harbour the warm, loving feelings that they have towards a parent. And it's simply a matter of extricating them from their loyalty conflict or double bind. And then organically the relationship will flourish as it did in the past.
A text in here from a mum. I'm a mum of two girls that I haven't seen in 2 months. I had a wonderful relationship with my girls that has been destroyed by their dad. They want no contact with me and accuse me of abusing them physically, which never happened. That's very difficult to hear, isn't it? Also another text, I went through parental alienation in 2005. I'm a mother. Solicitors need to get a better understanding of this. Just one piece of advice, keep on letting your children know how much you want to be with them and love them. It will help them later on when they are older. Glad to see this is finally coming to the airwaves. Is that something, Brian, how long have you been working in this particular field with parental alienation?
Sure.
Has it always had this term?
So I suppose, well, yes. Mm. I mean, it is parental alienation is an umbrella term. I personally have been in this space, or professionally been in this space since 1999. And I suppose it was my work with young people and families, and then, of course, my thesis, where I explored the lived experiences of alienated parents here in Ireland,
okay.
Mums and dads navigating this, I suppose really brought it to the fore for me.
Ask your guest, Maggie, how do you divide time equally between parents for the good of the child and their education and mental health?
So that's a really interesting question, because I suppose there's an awful lot, there's a couple of different factors there that need to be taken into consideration. The first point to make is that each case is probably largely unique. So sometimes, for example, a simple example would be there can be geographical considerations of where parents live. You know, if one parent is living 300 miles away from another, well, that's going to inform a particular concept. However, the emerging literature is telling us that in an ideal world, it would be 50-50 contact, or a presumption of 50-50 contact between parents who split. Now, as I say, there are a number of reasons that can impact on that, one of them being geographical, along with the ideas around the parental alienation phenomenon.
And also, I suppose, wherever the parent who isn't in the homestead anymore, where that parent is, and whether or not they've got the facilities, I suppose, to have the kids stay over or whatever it might be, yeah. Maggie, can you give the details of the website again? They missed it. I think that was it a .eu website?
That's right,
Brian?
So it's the platform parentalalienation.eu. It's a platform that I've recently set up. Its aim is to create awareness, education and interventions for both professionals and parents, both here in Ireland and throughout Europe.
Somebody else has texted in, Brian. I'm in the middle of parental alienation at the moment. Can you ask Brian, can it be reversed or even begin to be undone when there's no change in the parent's behaviour? What should this parent be doing now?
Okay, so there's a number of different pieces that parent can do. The first thing is that parent needs to become incredibly well-informed around the dynamics of parental alienation. That parent needs to engage with professionals, informed professionals and practitioners, legal, social and mental health, to effect tangible change. When we're at the severe end of the spectrum, we are dealing with a parent who is pathologically determined to erase the child from that parent's life. And tragically, what also happens is that the child is erased from the entire one half of a family. So grandparents, which is never spoken about either. Grandparents are alienated. A child will present and decide that they never want to speak or meet with a granny or grandmother ever again. And interestingly, I'm reminded of a recent case where a 9 and 10 year old presented to me and said to me, I never want to see my granny and grandmother ever again. And when we explored that a bit further with them, they said to me, well, they spoil us, and it's not good for grandparents to spoil children.
Wow. So where did they hear that?
Exactly. Yeah. And that brings us to the point where actually it is incredibly easy, once we're informed, it's incredibly easy to identify the dynamics of parental alienation in a family.
What do you do then, though, with that information? I'm just wondering about that particular case. Yeah. So do you go to the parents and say, don't be so silly?
So again,
spoiling is fine.
Yes. So again, when we're at the severe end of the spectrum, I often become involved in the context of family law proceedings. And in those cases, you're reporting back to the court. And you're into, I suppose, an entirely different platform there. The key message in that would be that what is required is early identification. If possible, then early intervention. And the reason early intervention is so successful is because it's at that point that perhaps maybe parents' alienating behaviours are unconscious, and they can be most easily reversed at that point in time. However, when we've been in the court system a number of times, or when we've been interviewed with social workers and Gardaí a number of times, we progress onto the severe end of the spectrum. When we're in that space, the literature tells us very clearly that when a parent is pathologically determined to erase a child from the other parent, we are likely dealing with a personality disorder in that parent. And what is required in those cases is very firm and proactive decisions by the judiciary to motivate behaviour change in that parent.
Is the judiciary up to it at the moment, do you think? I mean, a lot of people saying here they're not, you know, that the legal system doesn't recognise it properly.
Sure. So in my experience, there are some very, passionate legal practitioners and professionals who really get this. The difficulty is that there's a variety of systemic barriers and challenges that are, getting in the way of effective, tangible change and interventions in this space.
The process that the family law courts have sort of been described as a very slow-moving
They can be, absolutely. But again, as I say, it's a system, and it's inherently an adversarial system, which in mild to moderate end of the spectrum may not be so helpful. When we get to the severe end of the spectrum, we do need firm court orders, we do need specific court orders, and we need sanctions to be imposed on the alienating parent.
You've mentioned a couple of times early intervention, and we've had a text in here. I share the experiences of many of your contributors. I have been alienated for over a year from my three boys. Brian said that early intervention can help. What does early mean? Is it too late, says this person, after a year or after 2 years?
So I suppose I'll respond to the last point first, if that makes sense. So after a year or 2 years is certainly not too late. I have frequently seen children who haven't seen a parent for in excess of 2 years. And it's an incredible dynamic to watch, that once they've been taken out of that loyalty conflict, they can flick as quickly as a light switch. I've seen it happen in less than 20 minutes.
And would these children be young? I mean, would they be teenagers, or would they be, you know, still maybe under the age of 12?
As I'm speaking at this particular point, I'm thinking specifically of a preteens. Let me give you an example. I was recently working with a six-year-old, not in this jurisdiction, and the six-year-old presented as never wanting to see mum ever again. And she was putting out a number of different frivolous rationalisations for that while she was being observed by dad. Once we arranged for the child to observe dad leaving the room and observe dad leaving the building, and we then introduced mum to this six-year-old, the six-year-old instantly embraced her mother and kissed her and hugged her.
That's really hard to hear, isn't it? That's very emotional to hear, actually, because that's just sad. Mm.
That's the reality of it. And the difficulty is that very often uninformed practitioners will take an idea that, well, it needs to be baby steps and we need to pussyfoot around it. Actually, once we can be clear that there was a previous warm, loving relationship between the child and the targeted parents, actually what's required is proactive and swift actions.
What about teenagers? I mean, just going back to that text, I suppose, you know, is a year too late? Is it 2 years too late? What about teenagers? Are they a bit trickier? Simply by virtue of the fact that they're teenagers and they've got all sorts of other stuff going on, would it be as quick to kind of get back into that familiar relationship?
So that's an interesting piece. So teenagers, of course, naturally enough, for teenagers, any parent of teenagers listening to me will probably smile when I say that. When parents are going through high conflict separations and divorces, we need to be really, really clear. Are we dealing with alienation, or is this child simply being a teenager? And when we can differentiate the two, then we can move forward in an informed way with some certainty. So, for example, teenagers being teenagers, sometimes it can be about differing parenting styles. You know, another classic little piece is that sometimes with teenagers, as children are navigating different developmental milestones, they might regulate distance and closeness between one parent and another. That's not alienation. Mm-hmm. And so we need to be really, really clear.
Yeah.
If we're in the space of alienation, there's a very clear pathway in terms of identifying, intervening, assessment and intervening that is effective once we have the buy-in from the multidisciplinary buy-in of social, legal and mental health professionals acting in a collaborative way.
I'll just give out the website again, Brian, because so many people are getting in touch with us about this. It was parentalalienation.eu.
Yeah.
So it's a European website, obviously.
Sure.
I'll just say this to you, because it just, I suppose, goes to show the damage that can be created by this. My daughter was taken by her father when we divorced in the 80s and alienated me to the ninth degree. She last visited me in 1992. Totally ruined our relationship. Today, she's very messed up. She's a drug addict. My grandson is also a stranger to me.
Mm. And regrettably, that particular contributor is alluding to the significant psychological and emotional impacts I referred to earlier.
Yes, yeah. Brian, it's been fascinating having you in this morning and speaking to you, and just so many people getting in touch about this. And I just hope that maybe listening to you and giving out those details of that website can help people and help them to get the right help.
Can I also just say that I'm based in the Connolly Centre in Stillorgan?
Yes.
I can be contacted there at 01 2100 600.
There you go. Brian O'Sullivan, consultant, systemic family therapist and expert in what we've been speaking about just now, parental alienation. We'll take a break.